following podcast may contain spoilers.
This is the feature presentation review for Howard the Duck. Ladies and gentlemen, I am to begin this podcast, a sponsored feature presentation review. And of course, if you want to pick up a copy of the latest hit movies from our shop, but you don't live in Akron, Ohio, you are in luck. We're now offering exclusive Binge Movies membership cards to our monthly supporters. For just $3.99 a month, you'll get a personalized membership card with your name and member number. The card will entitle you to one feature presentation review, a special thank you on an episode, and a free pack of classic trading cards. Right now, I have about 20 stacks of the original 1989 Batman trading cards. They're 100% original. They're not reprints, and I will give them to you with your membership while supplies last, like the old-timey commercial said. My only advice to you, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart and our legal department, do not eat the gum.
Jesus!
All you have to do is go to bingemovies.podbean.com and hit get your membership to start your membership today. And if you don't want to do that, you can do what a certain binge lord did this very day. You could do a one-time sponsorship. For a one-time sponsorship, you give us $5, I send you a vinyl waterproof old school Binge Movies logo sticker, and you can go out and deface the public with it, and you can go out there and create havoc and menace and terrorize the hairless apes who exist in the world around you. For $10, you can select any film that we haven't reviewed for a deep dive feature presentation review. Like, I got an infinite list of movies I got to cover. I don't have time to wait around. But I may not be getting to the movie you may want us talking about soon enough. And if that's the case, jump the line. Get your Binge Movies fast pass via sponsorship. Just throw some money in the old PayPal account, and guess what? You can pick the movie. You pick the poison. Pin me, pay me. I lay down. I watch whatever you want me to, and I talk about it ad nauseum. And then if I'm lucky, I can rope somebody else into it. It's wonderful. But for $25, you get your choice of any five films for me to rank. And if I can pull in a guest, I will. All you have to do is go to bingemovies.podbean.com today to hit the membership or sponsorship button today, and you get to control the binge. I mean, don't talk about Howard the Duck, okay? I'm going to get to Howard the Duck, but I got to start off right off the top. Now that the plugs are out of the way, I got to get into the thing, okay? Because there's a lot about this movie that's inaccurate, okay? Howard the Duck came out in 1986 and has a 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I can only guess that that 13% is due to the high inaccuracy of, it's insane. All of the facts of this film are wrong. And when I get into the review portion, I'm going to break down for you what this movie gets wrong, because it just gets so much wrong. And to think that the youth of the 80s would have gone to this movie and they would have gotten so much, I'm not going to say misinformation. I think it's more nefarious than that. I think George Lucas filled this movie with disinformation, and he was trying to dissuade the public. He was trying to poison the minds of our children.
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
I think he was trying to poison their minds against science. I think he was trying to poison their minds against ducks. I think he was trying to poison their minds against Marvel movies. And more importantly, I think he was trying to poison the minds of the 80s youth against Cleveland, Ohio. AKA, in the 1980s, the mistake by the lake. Right? AKA, Randy Newman, burn on Great River. We all laughed. The Cuyahoga River caught on fire. Cleveland's a shithole. Ha ha ha, Major League. Nobody wants to play baseball in Cleveland. Unless your name is Albert Bell, motherfucker. Joey Bell. Unless your name is Carlos Baerga, Omar Vizquel, or Jim Thome. We built a statue to that guy. Did he win us a World Series? No. But we sold out a lot of games in the 90s. I mean, the greatest hitter in Cleveland history is probably Jim Thome. Maybe second only to Pablo Serrano. And that, he's not even a real person.
She's tough, Nacho. Look, I go to you. I stick up for you. You know, help me now. So fuck you, Jobu. I do it myself.
The second greatest highlight in Cleveland history, other than LeBron James coming back 3-1 to beat a so-called super team somewhere out west to bring in the first championship, I think, in 52 years, where they had to literally go back and re-edit an ESPN 30 for 30 because the 30 for 30 was like, oh, believe land. They believe they're going to win, but they're losers. Well, they had to re-edit that shit because we believed and we achieved. Eat shit and die, Steph Curry, or fuck off at least. Okay, now I got a little worked up there. Because here's why. This movie gets Cleveland wrong. This movie gets Marvel wrong. This movie ostensibly gets Howard the Duck wrong. Its own title character, the eponymous Howard the Duck. The movie gets quantum physics wrong. It wasn't Dr. Jennings who punched a hole in the universe. Everybody knew it was Dr. Mikhail Eisner. It was part of the Videopolis Project. Everybody knows that. Anybody that's ever studied history knows who's behind punching the hole through space and time. And quite frankly, it didn't happen anywhere near Cleveland. Everybody knows it happened in somewhere in the outskirts of Orlando, Florida, the effects of which were felt in the sister city of Orlando, the Rust Belt King of the Midwest, Akron, Ohio. This is in every standard textbook. This is common knowledge. And it wasn't a beam or a laser shot into the sky. You know what it was? It was a particle collider. I am going to apologize to my audience that I even have to go on about this because it's such obvious history. Look at Wikipedia. Google the shit. You learn this stuff in fourth grade. I don't want to condescend to you and assume that you don't know it. But what's clear is the screenwriters of Howard the Duck didn't know it. And that's why this thing has got a 13% Rotten Tomatoes. Because you take your kids to the movies to learn. You know, and you go there. And what do you think? It's a joke? Because if you would have went to a theater, you wouldn't have heard anybody laughing. I can tell you that much. You can't bring a duck from a duck world to Earth via a laser beam. What are we, dummies? You have to tear a hole in the fabric of space and time. I know I have a fold in the space-time fabric in the basement of Binge Movies. That's why I'm able to watch Top Gun Maverick, and that's why we have so many German Blu-rays and German Laserdisc and German Betamaxes and German VHS, because in the multiverse, formats never die. It's 1986 somewhere, but it's 2021 right here, goddamn, and it's time to re-examine Howard the Duck. I haven't kicked it over to anybody else. You want to know why? Because the dark movie overlords have struck again. It's ironic that of all weeks, of all shows, this would be the one where the dark movie overlords would strike. I found a guest. We were excited about it. He's a film critic in Cleveland. The person who sponsored this episode wanted him to be in the episode. He tweets a couple days before the episode comes out that he's going to be talking about it. He gets everybody all riled up and excited. The time to record comes. I fire up the software package. And who is on the other side of my screen but nothing, an infinite abyss of blackness? And isn't it obvious, folks? When you have a guest and you fire up the old Zoom, you fire up the old video software, and there's nothing but darkness on the other side, isn't it obvious what's going on? The dark movie overlords have sucked him up and shot him into some other dimension because they don't want the truth getting out. They don't want you to know what I know. They don't want you to know what I've been investigating, because ever since I got that letter from Pat, let me tell you something. He said that the truth was out there. And I told you people I was going to find it. And I've been looking and I've been searching. And they can put me in all the cubes they want to put me in. And they can send me in all the summer vacations they want to send me on. But I know the truth, goddammit!
He's like many of us, mired in the routine of upward mobility. But all that is about to change. with an unexpected trip to a place called Cleveland. A romance with a girl named Beverly.
He's my boyfriend!
Radical. And an adventure beyond the imagination of the average duck.
The duck's a lunatic!
George Lucas presents Howard the Duck, a Willard Hike film, a Gloria Katz production, rated PG. Now at select theaters, check newspapers.
We're going to start with a little game we like to call Pass or Recast. Starting with the top-billed actors from Howard the Duck, we're starting with Leia Thompson. Mom, you're so horny for a duck. It's Beverly Switzer. Leia Thompson is acting in a movie, and I'm not sure what movie she's in. I'm not going to say she's doing a bad job. I'm going to say that none of these people are in the same movie. I think the only two people who are in the same movie are Billy Barty in that duck costume. Actually, Ed Gale. There was like 10 people that played Howard the Duck. Tim Rose and Ed Gale being the main ones. Him and the sex offender, Jeffrey Jones, we'll get to him. They're in the same movie, but everybody else, they're like in a completely different film. And so I would say I'm a Leia Thompson fan, and this has got to be one of the worst experiences, one of the worst turned-in performances of her career. She stinks in this. I'd be remiss to say, if I didn't mention, that the Lady Wan thinks that the styling and presentation of her is very nice, and that's only because that whole fashion is kind of coming back in fashion, and Leia Thompson was wearing leggings and tights in public long before it was socially acceptable, so... Leia Thompson. If you ever want to see Leia Thompson in her underwear in bed with a little person dressed as a duck, which has got to be somebody's fetish somewhere, there's a subreddit for that kind of shit. This is the movie for you. Now, going to Jeffrey Jones, whose photo did not populate in my notes. I take that as a sign from God. He is, of course, a child predator and sex offender. Before that, he was in Mom and Dad Save the World, which was his biggest offense and crime to date until the child predation stuff came out. He plays Dr. Walter Jenny, and it is with great trepidation. I have to say recast because of who he is, but I'm going to say it. The sex offender is the best part of the movie. Now we can move on to Tim Robbins, arguably the worst part of the movie. That's going to be a recast. I don't know what Tim Robbins, I don't know what cartoon Tim Robbins is stepping out of. I don't know what he's trying to do here. It's very, very clear that this man, barring maybe a Hudsucker proxy or something in that vein, it's very clear that this guy has absolutely no acting chops whatsoever for comedy. He just doesn't simply have the comedy chops. Then we're going to get into Ed Gale. Of course, I've mentioned him before. I don't know what he did or didn't do. He wore an animatronic duck head on his head. So for that, I got to give him a pass because I imagine him sweating in there and I imagine him walking around kind of top heavy with a 75-pound duck head walking around with a little jacket on, a little satin jacket, running around trying to fuck Leia Thompson. And, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs in life, and he experienced both right there, buddy. So Ed Gale, I don't know. I don't know what to say about it. I think I got Chip Zien. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that wrong. Zines are things that... weirdos in the 90s put out when they are fans of something. Now we just call that Twitter. But yeah, Chip is Howard T. Duck. He's the voice of Howard the Duck. And I think he does okay. I think, you know, he's obviously being looped in later. And I think of all the problems with a movie called Howard the Duck, the voice of the duck is probably the least problem I have with the film. Then there's Tim Rose. He's one of many Howard the Ducks. He's the last that we're going to cover. IMDb the rest. And I'm going to just go ahead and give it a pass. So I got Leia Thompson, and I'm going to say not great. She looks great, isn't acting great. I would do a recast. Who am I putting in there? I don't know. We've just been on this roll with Dr. Wolfula and a couple other people with Patricia Arquette. I think you got to put a real weirdo in there. I don't buy her as this cherry bomb, punk rock Cleveland chick. I don't get it. She's charming. She's attractive. This is not a good performance. I think you got to find a weirdo. And I think Patricia Arquette is the weirdo for this film. Jeffrey Jones is the best part of the film, but he's a sex offender, so you got to recast it. Who are you going to put in there? I say you put in Rick Moranis. He's going to play. It's a little too close to Ghostbusters, but we've seen him do Lewis Tully, and if you got to be possessed with an alien and act strange, why not have it be him, even though he's the best part of the film? Tim Robbins, get him the fuck out of there. I don't know. Put Howie Mandel in there. I mean, it's such a thankless role. Put anybody in there. Put Eric Stoltz in there. Could you imagine Christopher Lloyd in the role of Dr. Walter Jennings? I can. I think it would be amazing. You got to get Tim Robbins out of there. Fuck off with Tim Robbins. Put somebody else in there. It doesn't really matter who. And everybody else is fine. There's really nobody in this movie. There's just a handful of character actors and very many little people. So they didn't have to abide by union rules. You know, just rip one out of the suit, put another little person in the suit, have them sweat their balls off for a couple hours. And just as they're about to pass out and or die, just swap them out for another one. Really. I think that the Howard radio-controlled mouth head costume deal is by far one of the better effects or most impressive effects of the movie. And there's a lot of Industrial Light and Magic opticals in this. Obviously, you have George Lucas producing it, and the script was actually sort of retooled. It was you know, Howard the Duck was originally kind of a satirical character. It was a social commentary, and it was satirizing 80s society and culture and comic books and all these sort of things as a meta character through parody, through making people ducks. You could get away with a lot of stuff in comic books that you couldn't necessarily do. And almost in the same way that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a parody of the Frank Miller material, the Frank Miller Daredevil run in particular, Howard the Duck was a satire of a lot of different things. And it was arguably a fairly like liberal political comic book. Arguably. It's always interesting to go back and look at the politics of a previous generation, but it was obviously advocating or satirizing at the very least a lot of different things of 80s conservatism, and as a lot of stuff was at the time. A lot of creatives were sort of picking at that in one form or another. George Lucas shit-canned all of that. It was originally going to be an animated feature, and in fact, they tried to do a completely computer animated Howard. The technology just wasn't there. So when you think about it, Pixar would end up being founded February 3rd, 1986. This film ended up coming out August of 1986. There is an alternative universe, a multiverse, if you will, where George Lucas gets this project up and running a little bit quicker, and the CGI that they tried to use for Howard the Duck about 10 years before they would really almost perfect it for the time with Toy Story. There's a world in which the first Marvel movie is a Pixar animated feature produced by George Lucas.
It's great.
It's going to be great.
That's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
That's going
to
be great.
I want you to think about that. When you think about the twists and turns of life, that is most certainly a twist and turn. The thing about Howard the Duck and why it was so hard to translate, other than the technology wasn't there from a computer animation perspective, is that Howard the Duck, the comic books, as best I understand them, Howard was a meta character. Howard was a Deadpool type character, right? It was a way at picking out the tropes of society and having a sort of, the book has been defined by some people as existentialist, which is odd to think about when you think about Howard the Duck, but it was intentionally bizarre. It was oddball, almost outsider art, but under the umbrella of Marvel Comics. And I think that that's really interesting. So the idea that they want to make this movie, but they want to use it as a showcase for ILM, or they want to use it as a showcase for animation, the computers aren't quite there yet. So then they shift to live action. When they shift to live action for the adaptation, Lucas pushes for the script to be essentially stripped of all of its satire. So what you end up with, the byproduct of that, is just this duck world that is nothing but lame parodies and these duck puns. They're not even really puns. Instead of kung fu, it's quack fu. It's not really a pun. It's not really on the money or in any particular way. And there's this weird thing from sort of taking, transmutating a social satire parody comic book, meta textual comic book that is a little edgy, transforming it into a live action animatronic puppeteer movie that just 4 years later, we would see them do the same thing with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And there's a lot of TMNT 1990 vibes in this, between the radio-controlled mouth and costumes, and between the old reliable tropes of introducing the female character, April O'Neil, in this case Beverly, by putting them in peril, usually in the 80s, an attempted rape of some kind. The hero emerges. I mean, it's in RoboCop, it's in Batman, 89, I think. There's always some sort of woman in peril, woman's under attack by street weirdos. The hero arrives and does martial arts. And in this case, our Beverly is our April O'Neil. And I guess that would make Howard the Duck Raphael. If you're going to be 80s PG and you're going to dance around some risque, scatological humor, let's just put it like that. At one point, Beverly starts duck teasing. Now I'm doing the puns. Howard and the top, the quills, the feathers on the top of his head come popping up to simulate an erection. Now, an erection, folks, is when blood...
When you build with Erector, you've got the tools. Erector power motor. Erector hand wrench. Erector power tool. The original Erector set. It's amazing what you and Erector can do.
One of the jokes they left on the table is at one point Beverly is digging through his duck wallet. She finds his blooming ducks instead of blooming dales. She finds all of these credit cards and she goes, oh boy, oh brother. As if she's looking at bad puns, bad duck puns, because she is, but she's not. In the context and in the reality of the movie, Beverly's not looking at bad duck puns. Beverly's looking at... First of all, she's stealing. She has tried to seduce. Howard is tired. Howard falls asleep. She starts molesting Howard in his sleep by filling him up. This is not a joke. And then starts rifling through his personal belongings. And it's my understanding. Well, let's take a step back. She's only interested in touching him and molesting him as a duck and rifling through his property. When she finds out that on his home world, he's a rock star, she calls him a sellout. But all that means is that he's made money and she's playing shithole clubs in Cleveland, where the manager is taking all the money. That's all that means. You know, so you sold out, as if the Cherry Bombs are some sort of virtuous punk band. Like, were you playing with Black Flag, Beverly? Were you with the Circle Jerks? I think I might have missed that. Speaking of Circle Jerk, she finds a Howard the Duck-sized condom in his wallet. And if you're listening to this and you're like, I've never heard of Howard the Duck, or I've heard of it as a notoriously bad movie, some might call it a real egg. If you're listening to this and that's what you're hearing, and you're young and you don't know what it was like to be a child in the 80s, these were the sort of movies that they would put on at daycare or school, or if you went to a more mainline church, Sunday school, when it was raining and you couldn't go outside, because it looked like a cartoon, and it was based on a comic book. So we're going to throw this in. And you would get a Pee-wee's Big Adventure, and you'd be petrified by a large Marge, and you'd be just staring at a grown man pretending to be a child doing oddities, or a grown man pretending to be a grown duck in a costume fucking around with a human woman, just rubbing the line of bestiality. And it's really Beverly that initiates it. Howard is the reluctant lover. Howard's a lot of talk and bravado. His bill is bigger than his bite. He does try to bite a large woman's ass, which can we officially say that Howard the Duck invented eating ass? I mean, I'm sure people have been eating ass since the turn of the century. I'm sure of it. But it seems to me that Howard popularized it. That's a theory, okay? That's going to come from the binge movie sex book I'm putting out. Everything I know about sex, I learned from the movies. It's means I'm very well adjusted. So she's digging through his wallet, long story short, after she finds out he's a rock star and suddenly becomes attracted to him despite the fact that she thought he was a freak just mere seconds before, she finds a condom. Now, if you're going to go the whole duck pun, duck route joke, and you're going to make duck equivalents to everything from our world, then I understand putting a condom in his wallet. The condom is outside of a wrapper, which means that Howard is just walking around with a loose condom in his little wallet. That has one of two options. Now, it seems rolled up, so it doesn't seem as if it's been used. But in my mind, the only way or only reason one would have a loose condom in their wallet would be if you were an idiot. And you didn't really care about the, you were just sort of trying to give the person you were about to sleep with, duck or human, the benefit of the doubt and go, oh, I got one right here. But it doesn't seem like it would be good for anything. The other issue that I have with it is, you know, if we're gonna try to teach the kids something about safe sex, we have to teach them about duck sex. Ducks have corkscrew cocks. I don't know if you know this, but they have dicks the size and shape of corkscrew. It's internal, which at one point when they strip this duck nude and they start looking for his genitals, they say something to the effect of maybe it's on the inside. And it is. Like any, most birds, I think all birds, their genitals are inside, male or female. And you kind of have to go fishing for them. The official term is sexing, I believe. You have to manually sex the bird to get it to produce what it needs to. And if you think I'm joking, you can rent the art house film Minari. Now, I know I'm a bit all over the place here, but so is this movie. And I'm not joking when I tell you I'm going through it pretty linearly. Beverly decides that she's going to take Howard to a scientist, a fairly reasonable conclusion that maybe he, this Phil character, who is a quote unquote scientist, will be able to help figure out how Howard got here. Phil is played by Tim Robbins. As I said at the top of the episode, he's terrible. He's the very worst part of this movie, and that includes the sex offender. I'm going to keep reiterating that. The sex offender is the least distasteful part of the film by a long shot. The thing about Phil's character is it isn't explained until later what his relationship is to Beverly or her band. So in a traditional movie, he would be Beverly's ex-boyfriend or at least somebody who was a suitor of Beverly's, right? A nerd who liked the rock chick, a male groupie, a hanger-on, a Lewis Tully type, as I've name-checked Rick Moranis earlier. That's not what's going on here. It's later revealed, much later in the film, I'm going to say half or further along in the film, that Phil is dating one of Beverly's bandmates who only appears in a scene and a half. I don't understand why it was written that way, because it doesn't serve any particular point other than we want to have a quasi-romance between Beverly and this duck, and that's fairly distasteful. After Phil proves himself to be nothing more than a lab assistant slash janitor, Howard gets pissed and he goes to the Ohio Bureau of Employment to get a job at a hot tub sex club. Now, as a child, when I watched this movie at my Sunday school, I went to a weird church, of course. When I was watching this in Sunday school, maybe you were watching it during a rainy recess, as I was watching the film, it occurred to me that it was a hot tub club, and it did seem like the people were fairly amorous. But because I was a pre-sexual being watching a highly sexual duck film, it made me feel uncomfortable as a child. And at this point, I'm just going, what is the tone of this movie? Does it want to be a risque sex comedy? Kind of. Does it want to be a comic book, I don't want to say superhero film, but a comic book action movie? Kind of. Does it want to be a horror movie? Because at some point, coming up right here, this film takes a very weird turn into 80s fantasy science fiction horror. And if I had to say what my biggest issue is with Howard the Duck, is it doesn't have a particular tone, and it doesn't really seem to have a particular narrative. It seems to be it's just, you know, the opening presents it to you, explains to us the multiverse and how there's all these different worlds. And this, you know, in the beginning, there was Howard the Duck. And it's not a bad opening. It's a little over the top. It's a little bit. And that's, pardon this pun, but the movie is neither fish nor fowl. The movie doesn't know what it wants to be. Are you going to be, like the comic book, a weird outsider satire? I name checked it earlier, but are you going to be like a Pee-wee's Big Adventure, right? Which is a really strange movie that's trying to be strange. It's an odd alternative reality where grown adults are playing children and grown adults as children are having relationships with other grown adults who don't appear to be children. It's very strange. And there's a surrealism to it that's intentional, which the 80s were one of the last great decades, or maybe the greatest decade, for being able to mash up tones and genres like that. Now, not everything is a success. You get something like Buckaroo Banzai, which is so obtuse as a movie that the average film goer doesn't know what to make of it. And it becomes a cult movie later on, which I know there is a cult for Howard the Duck, but it doesn't, it's not that weird. It's not so weird that you get either a Buckaroo Banzai or a Pee-wee's Big Adventure. It's not so wholesome that you're getting a high concept movie like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or even like Big Top Pee-wee, which is way more family friendly, but equally as weird, just not as dark. You're not getting any of that. So I don't know really what this is, because we have an extended scene of Howard the Duck trying to go for unemployment, and none of the jokes really land. And at one point he's trying to eat this woman's ass, as I said previously, and then he ends up working at a swingers joint. You know, it's as if he got a job at the body shop and he wants to lick the lollipop. You understand what I'm saying? And this is where I think when they significantly altered the personality of Howard and of the tone of the comic book and tried to play the story straight instead of as a surrealistic satire, and then they decided to add in all these supernatural horror elements because they could sort of put a spotlight on Industrial Light and Magic. And that's like in some of the trivia of this movie as well. George Lucas really wanted to spotlight Industrial Light and Magic. They did the special effects for every other movie that came out. It was them and Boss Films in the 80s. And Boss Films was Richard Edlund and some of the best people from Industrial Light and Magic. So the two biggest special effects firms who did everything from fairly lower budget films to the biggest blockbusters all came off of the original Star Wars. And if you're wanting to hang your shingle on something, George, maybe hang it on Star Wars. Now, I realize that Star Wars at this point, the last one was 3 years before this, and you can't just always be like, well, we did Star Wars, it rests on your laurels. But I don't know if your big follow-up from that isn't, well, we also did Indiana Jones. No. We're going to put our name on Howard the Duck. Howard quits his job and he's homeless after falling out with Beverly for some reason. And he wanders back to the club where she's playing. And I have to ask myself, if this was really Cleveland in 1986, where would the Cherry Bombs be playing? Maybe the Agora. I don't know if you're a Clevelander of that era and you remember where punk weirdos and space alien ducks from Duck Dimensions would have gone to see a very bad leather quasi rock and roll pop band, let me know. We get a Holly Robinson Pete appearance. She appears as one of Bev's backup singers. I don't even know what her role in the band is. I have no clue. At this point, I'm going to make a confession. This is a movie that's been covered by many podcasts. And anytime another podcaster would bring up Howard the Duck, I would say to myself, well, that's the movie where Lea Thompson fucks a duck. I had the distinct memory, some may say fantasy, but I had the distinct memory that it was 100% she fucked this duck. Binge lords, I got to go on the record. I got to make a confession. I got to come clean. I have got to restore respect on the good goddamn name of Lea Thompson. She was horny for the duck. Yes. Thirsty for the duck. Maybe even in love. truly in love, not just an interplanetary curiosity, not just a fluidity of sexuality that takes us into a territory that is truly an abomination before God.
Hey, Scotty. Jesus, man.
She doesn't fuck this duck. She is endeared to him, and they kiss, but there is a Austin Powers style silhouette that when Phil shows up with Dr. Jenning, aka Jeffrey Jones, aka a horrible monster, we just didn't know it. Which is maybe why he was so good at delivering some of those very disturbing lines. I stood corrected. And I had to say, I'm sorry. So to the producers, the writer, the director, the stars, and to George Lucas himself, Mr. Lucas, on behalf of Binge Movies, I'd like to formally apologize for all the terrible things I said about Howard the Duck and how it was about the bestiality. That was clearly not a real thing. That was clearly something from the depraved mind of a broken man who's forced to binge, review, and rank movies ad nauseum, and whose best friends and guests are perpetually killed off by a dark, evil corporation who you may or may not have sold certain properties to for many billions of dollars. But that's neither here nor there. So, Mr. Lucas, I know you listen. I do get your letters. My admin does read them to me from time to time. I find them to be a bit rambling, and I don't know what the hell the Book of Wills is. Please stop talking to me about it. I do not understand the microscopic world of the life field of the universe. I don't understand that. I know you've sent me a couple of your scripts for some of your more quote-unquote smaller and personal films, and I have shredded those. So please stop. But other than that, I want you to know, Mr. Lucas, I think I can, at this point, after all the years of us not communicating with each other, or at least me not responding to your phone calls.
Hello, no one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
And so what happens in the end is they all join forces and everything, and the Goongas battle the droids in this huge kind of war and peace battle.
I feel that I have the right to call you George. I'm just going to take the liberty. Georgie, you've done a lot of good things in your life, Georgie. You've put a lot of money to technical use, Georgie, to expand the worthwhileness of film, to take film technology to a level that we didn't even know was possible. And for that, I appreciate you. I commend you. I give you your star in the Binge Movies Walk of Fame, which is being newly constructed outside of our Akron store here. So far, it's you and Dom DeLuise. Yours isn't in yet. It's still under review, and the votes are not in your favor. But spiritually speaking, I give you your props. I give you your props, George. And I disrespected you because I said for years publicly to other podcasters who probably carried on this misinformation, and to friends and family and my pastor and my surgeons and my dentist, when any time they said, you're obsessed with movies, and you like movies, and do you like bad movies that are so good they're bad? What's the worst movie you've ever seen? Have you ever seen Howard the Duck? I said, yes, I've seen it. What are your memories of Howard the Duck? And I would say, just openly at my Sunday services, that's the one where the girl fucks the duck. The pearls were clutched for no good apparent reason, because those facts were false. So as much disinformation as you have spread about science, my friend, in the history of the Dark Overlords, I spread disinformation about you and your film. Leia Thompson only looks like she's fucking a duck through the eyes of a real-life sexual predator. And for that, Mr. Lucas, I apologize. At this point, I did notice a point of real film criticism here, that the score to this movie, there is some kind of Western-themed, like slightly Western-themed, sentimental. There's an element of the score, I swear to you, maybe Brian Skull out there could hit me up on Twitter and let me know, from Sonic Cinema, that is completely repurposed from some other movie. There is a love theme between Beverly and Howard that they continuously go to, that I know I've heard in an episode of Amazing Stories or some movie somewhere. It almost sounds like something out of Field of Dreams. And when you have a score that's a sentimental noir-ish score, and you're putting it underneath a horrible explosion that may have killed dozens of people and that invited a horrible fantasy demon monster into the body of a real life demon monster named Geoffrey Jones, and he transforms into a dark overlord of the universe, maybe you don't want your sentimental Field of Dreams style score. Just saying, I'm not a professional, you know, film composer. That's David Rosen over at Piecing It Together Pod. That ain't me. I'm just the guy that rambles about movies on the internet. I'm the weirdo at the movie store in Akron, Ohio, talking to you about a movie that currently has 13% on Rotten Tomatoes because somebody gave me money to do it. I am a whore. The testimonies of whores, not always reliable. We just covered that. I thought the woman had sex with a duck. So maybe I don't know as much about movies as I thought. I'm sorry. Dr. Jennings, turns out he was doing some experiments to measure, you know, some of the radiation, I think, some of the background radiation from the Big Bang, I think is what he says. And so they were just measuring at that, but something hijacked their laser and repurposed it to punch a hole in some other dimension to free themselves. And there was some sort of evil that came down. And in that process, Howard was also sucked from his world over to ours. And Jennings is trying to figure out how to reverse the polarity of the laser and get Howard home. And I thought the thing that was refreshing here is that he's a scientist. Normally in these movies, they ET the shit out of it, and the scientists are not there to help. They're there to study. They're there to dissect. And Jennings has no interest in that. He is consumed by his laser and is like, you get to make history twice, Howard. We're going to figure it out, little buddy, and I'm going to get you home. And that's the goal. And then he's possessed. His insides are transformed. He says they're being replicated. That's a very specific diagnosis, doctor. I thought astrophysics was your field, not necessarily internal medicine, but somehow he's able to say, my insides are being transformed into a dark overlord of the universe. Turns out these dark overlords were banished into a demon dimension where they were unleashed by a laser. Now this, as I've said, is a wildly inaccurate representation of the dark overlords. Lasers didn't free them. It was a particle collider. And only, as everyone knows, as is common sense, the only thing that is presently standing in their way from transforming your insides is this podcast and a multiverse of home video rental stores, which block the gate from them to be able to turn your guts into monster guts. Listen, it's... Again, we all learn this stuff in history. I mean, this was social studies for most of us, right? Like, come on. This is everyday fare. Laugh number one. I can count them on two fingers. Not two hands, two fingers. They go to the diner scene. So you have Howard, Beverly, and Dr. Jennings, who are possessed, who's possessed by a dark overlord, whose guts have been transformed into overlord guts, apparently, is a thing. And now he's starting to look weird and rot, and he's doing a whole almost Edgar Men in Black kind of thing, and he's possessed. It's a little Ghostbusters adjacent, little precognitive Edgar from Men in Black. It's some body horror elements being thrown in here with some nice rotoscoping work is the technique to have lights and stuff shooting out of people's eyes. And it's some really good stuff. I think this, ironically, Ghostbusters and probably Big Trouble in Little China are probably the three best uses of it outside of probably Star Wars, where that technique was kind of, if not originated, certainly perfected. Well, they go to a diner and it's some sort of like chop suey, greasy spoon. I'm not 100% getting what the joke is. Please just tweet me your hate and tell me what the joke is. They're arguing and Jennings is possessed and is going on about the dark overlords are going to take over and they order the special and she delivers the special and it's two giant eggs And Howard starts freaking out, and he has a couple of semi-humorous lines. I didn't say funny, I said semi-humorous lines. But the funniest line comes from the waitress, in my opinion. And she's like this hippy-dippy, almost Valley Girl type, who's real new agey or whatever. Talks about vibes, man. And she goes, are we all like having the same conversation here? Because there's about three or four different random bullshit things that are happening at the table. And her delivery of that and the timing of that line and just the execution of that, I thought was actually really funny. The crowd then decides to randomly cook Howard the Duck. They think that Howard is a ventriloquist dummy and that Jennings is the one doing the talking. At one point, a hillbilly, because it's always hillbillies, even though this is supposed to be downtown Cleveland, which I've been to downtown Cleveland, and there's a lot of things there. The hillbillies in hunting gear, not necessarily one of them, but that's fine. That was the shorthand for this person is ignorant. They have a slight southern accent. And he goes, go ahead, talk, dummy. And that got a slight chuckle out of me of just this grown man talking to a little person standing on a table in a duck costume and saying, talk, dummy. It was the absurdity of the moment. And it got to me. Jennings, of course, goes apeshit for some sort of a controller he's going to use to control another laser to bring down more monsters from another dimension, the Dark Overlords, to possess more people, to take over the world. And the crowd takes it from Howard because Howard took it to Jennings. The crowd decides they're going to cook Howard for some reason. That seems to come out of nowhere. And Jennings then uses his telepathy. And I thought this was a very well executed special effects scene using optical and in-camera effects. The rotoscoping, the wire work, I thought all of this was done fairly well, and I hate to say it, but Jones is the best part of the movie. I don't know if it's the best part of the movie because it's the one that gets the most away from Howard and leans the most into sci-fi and horror, because in those moments, I feel as if the movie has picked a tone. Jennings is a slightly comedic but progressively dark sci-fi Lovecraftian horror, body horror sort of character. And at that moment, the movie has picked a tone. Whereas I think all of the Howard stuff misses the mark because once they got past the initial conceit that this is a humanoid duck in a ape humanoid world, that's the joke. The joke is, he's evolved from ducks. Isn't that funny? And the answer is no, it's not. It's a weird fact, but it's not funny. So it doesn't really, and then you want me to care about him being on unemployment? I'm not sure that you can get unemployment without a, well, never mind. I think the most memorable part of the movie and the thing that stuck out to me the most and the thing that I ironically cared the most about was the Jennings aspect of it. I remember the tongue tentacle coming out, which is actually really scary. I remember him deteriorating progressively over the film, and I think the makeup effects are really great. I remember him, you know, walking into a power plant, which, by the way, that power plant would not be in Cleveland proper, but it would be in Perry, Ohio, which is way far east of Cleveland and is at least one or two counties over. And the plant they actually filmed at was the Ranch Seco Nuclear Power Plant. It was not the Perry Nuclear Power Plant in Perry, Ohio. None of this was really, most of this other than I think maybe one or two establishing shots were actually shot in California, not Cleveland. So this was not shot anywhere in Cleveland proper. Jennings then eats an entire core, and I am sad to report that Beverly would later die after this movie from radiation poisoning just a short 6 months after the events of this movie. So good luck with that record contract, Beverly. We get into the stop motion ending where the monster is dislodged from Jennings thanks to some sort of magic space laser that comes out of nowhere that Philip literally is like, aka Tim Robbins, is like, I think I may know something that'll stop him if I can just find it. And then presumably he goes into a science closet, I don't know, and pulls out a science laser and he shoots the space monster with a science laser. And it doesn't kill Jennings, but it separates Jennings from this giant monster. And at this point, I had major MIB vibes. Now, Chris Williams over on Twitter hit me up and said that when he watched Howard the Duck, he saw some kind of an overlap between Mikey from the opening of Men in Black. And I thought about Mikey, but what really stuck out to me, this whole ending really felt like the ending with the bug once it leaves the Edgar suit and is trying to use the spaceship from the World's Fair to get off the planet before the Altarians blow the planet up. And this is the one thing that I will give the 80s, you know, stop motion effects aside, which are not the most egregiously bad stop motion effects. I think parts of the Ed 209 and certainly some of the weird small puppet of Dick being thrown out the window in RoboCop. And I don't mean that in a dirty way. It sounded really, really dirty. Dick being thrown out the window. I mean, this has been a very scatological episode. Very, very kind of filthy. So I'm wound up. Okay. And I think the perversion of this film has seeped into my soul. I will need a deep cleansing after this is over. But the one thing I would give the 80s is that they were willing to intermix horror and fantasy and high concept into comedy and into family films, for lack of a better word, or at least movies that parents needed to give guidance on. I enjoy the fact that they took some risks. It just seems to me that they didn't have a point. It didn't seem to me that they really knew what they wanted to do. They had the rights to a Marvel character. They stripped that character of everything that made him distinct or interesting. So there's no way that a core audience of Howard the Duck cultists would go to this movie and feel satisfied, because it has some of the trappings of it, but without the satire. So then that's why it feels at times perverted, because it's not, if you're doing something satirically, if you're doing something with a wink and a nod, if you're doing something that's metatextual, if you're doing something that's playing around in the world of semiotics, right? If you're doing something that is bringing to bear the cliches and tropes of comic books and movies, then you can do certain things, and the absurdity of it or the weirdness of it or even the unnaturalness of it doesn't strike you, because that you're in a surreal world. When you play it straight, it suddenly becomes creepy. So when they go to the more fantasy elements of the, again, the body horror and the science fiction and the fantasy elements, that's when the movie's at its best, because then it's not in our reality. You're not trying to fit a weird duck and a great many pair of duck tits in this PG movie. You're not trying to fit duck nudity into a serious storyline about a duck who's lost in Cleveland, right? I mean, that's also a Mick Foley storyline, right? Lost in Cleveland, is that when he lost his memory? So, you know, it's not the best of WCW, and it's unfortunately not the best of George Lucas. It's also not the worst. The Howard the Duck song, which mercifully, thank you, sweet Jesus, is not a rap. The only good movie rap that ever existed, there's two. And one isn't about the movie, but it was in the movie with Tupac and Digital Underground all around the world. Phenomenal. That's just a phenomenal dance record in the middle of a movie with a guy who has his nose is a penis. It's not corkscrew shaped. His nose is just penis shaped. And the thing is, it's a prosthetic nose, which means he made it out of somebody's penis, presumably. Now, how does he keep his penis nose from rotting? I don't know. I have no idea. But for $10, I will find out for you. If you want me to watch Nothing But Trouble and rant about it in a lonely, dark closet, supply closet of a actually relatively successful video store, then I'm the guy for you, baby. What have I done with my life? The Howard the Duck song is so damn catchy, folks. It is a damn treat and a damn delight. And you're going to hear it here from me first. This movie needed to be weirder, and it needed more musical numbers. If somehow you took the script of Howard the Duck and the script of Streets of Fire, and you smash those two sons of bitches together, and you left in the weird monster stuff, and the weird Lovecraft horror stuff and the weird body horror deteriorating scientist shit, and you put all that shit into a movie, it would make maybe one of the worst movies ever made, or maybe one of the greatest movies of the 1980s. I'm not sure. But that's the universe I'm going to live in. If we keep punching holes in the fabric of space and time, we're eventually going to find that dimension. And that's where I'm going to go. That's the world I want to live in. Which brings me to a question for you, the audience. Dear audience, dear binge lords, what is the best fictional 80s band? Is it? I'm going to give you three options here. A. The Cherry Bombs from Howard the Duck. Is it B? The Hong Kong Cavaliers. What a name. Or is it C? Ellen Aim and the Attackers. It's question number one, three options. A. The Cherry Bombs. B. The Hong Kong Cavaliers. Or C. Ellen Aim and the Attackers. This is 80s fictional bands that appear in movies. Okay, 1980s. I'm giving you three options. I don't want to hear about something that's not on this list. I gave you the options. This is multiple choice. There is no D other. It's A, B, or C. Of these three, who's the best? Now, the creme de la creme, the toughest question anyone's going to ask you in your life, other than, have you made your decision for Christ? Who is the better 80s guitarist? Is it A, Howard the Duck? Because Howard the Duck fucking shreds. Or is it B, Marty McFly? Tell me, baby. Tell me who you got. Daddy wants to know. I gotta know. Well, the movie ends. Howard blows up the stop-motion puppet. But unfortunately, he can't go home, so he decides to join the band. He shreds the fucking guitar like Van Halen went to him for lessons. This little guy's dancing on stage. It's a great fucking moment. I'm not being sarcastic. The final moments of this film, once the plot's over, are wonderful. And I think that's the problem. The problem with the movie is the script and the plot and the Howard plot. They didn't have one. And the ones they quasi came up with just quite frankly, isn't very good. So, if I were to give this a score out of 10, I would give it a 4.5 out of 10. I'm going to make the argument to you, despite all of the things that I said, which were only briefly exaggerated for the sake of levity and entertainment, but I didn't require much exaggeration on my part. The movie actually is pretty good. I really enjoy some of the effects for what they were at the time. It's a throwback piece. Howard himself is not very annoying. So many of these movies that have a Howard the Duck sort of character are exceptionally annoying films. Howard is not an annoying character. Much to my displeasure, Jeffrey Jones is actually great, even though he's a horrible monster in real life. The downside is that Robbins is unbearable. Leah Thompson, as I said, is in a completely different movie. But I think when you balance that out with the fact that the Howard the Duck theme is catchy AF, it's not that bad. It's not that bad. I have seen way worse movies than Howard the Duck. It is too long. This movie, I think, is close to 2 hours long. This would have been a perfect, silly 90-minute movie. Get the fuck in. Get the fuck out. This needed to be... The Howard plot line, it needed to have more weirdness, satire. As I've said repeatedly, it needed to be more like the Howard the Duck comic book, or some mishmash. I think if you mishmash some of the stylistic elements of, like a Streets of Fire, maybe incorporating more of the music since he's a rock star, that doesn't factor into his plot whatsoever. Until the end, Hades was all about rock stars and high concept, weird sci-fi shit. And all that stuff was all blended up together. So it would kind of make sense, right? So there was a version of this movie that would probably still have been a flop and would probably still have a 13% Rotten Tomatoes, but it would be the sort of cult movie that I could say, this is actually a hidden gem. What we have here is a movie that isn't as bad as its reputation would lend you to believe. But it isn't nearly as interesting as that reputation would lend you to believe either. And that's the problem. Well, that is my feature presentation review for Howard the Duck. This, of course, is part of our VHS summer, all summer of 2021. As the world is opening up to most people, I figured what better way to celebrate than by having us all stay inside and watch VHS movies or VHS media, things like Scrubs, things that came out in that window of the VHS era. And in fact, when our summer season drops, season 5.3, it will be a summer season of movies that are almost all were VHS releases, if not all of them. There's going to be a heavy influence. There's going to be a heavy bias towards VHS movies. It's all a part of what we're calling VHS summer. This is my question for you, Binge Lords. Let me know some weird-ass movies that were in your grandma's VHS collection or that your dad or mom recorded off of HBO that you watched or that somebody at church put in front of you, and it was a very strange movie, and it took you until the internet existed to discover that it wasn't a horrible nightmare. For some of you, it's Howard the Duck. For others, it was, like I said, Large Marge. For me, it was Invaders from Mars, the Tobe Hooper one. There was where the teacher eats the frog and is chasing a little boy around. I thought for sure I imagined that, and it was left such an impression on me that I had a dream that both of my parents' heads were turned into half-sliced open grapefruits. And they were trying to get me to eat something that would then turn me into a grapefruit as well. And that was a mix-up between two horror movies that showed on the same day that freaked me the fuck out. VHS classics, Invaders from Mars, which was a canon film, and The Stuff. I've covered neither one of those on Binge Movies, but if that's something you'd like us to do, go to bingemovies.podbean.com. Hit the sponsorship button. The best way to support the show is to hit a reoccurring membership for $3.99. And we've got a lot of benefits already. It's not a gimmick. It's not a joke. We will send out, you join our membership database. We send you out a laminated card with a unique membership number, your name, all your vital statistics that, you know, would go on in a traditional video club card. We ship it to you. We have shipped them around the world. It may take a long-ass time to get to you, but we do it. Ship it to you. It entitles you to benefits as part of our membership club here at Binge Movies, and those benefits are always expanding. So once we, you know, establish a firm enough base, there's going to be some special things coming your way. I don't want to announce them before the time is ready. I know we got some new listeners here, and I want to finish with this. Binge Lord is, I don't mean this in a joking way, it's anybody. It's an all-inclusive term. If you listen to one episode, you're a binge lord. If you're a woman, you're like, I'm a binge lady. If that's what you prefer to be called, I'll call you that. But binge lord is men, it's women, it's however you identify. It's the full spectrum of identities are welcome here at Binge Movies. Unironically, no joke, all sincerity. So when you hear me use that phrase, it just means everybody. So if you're listening, you are a binge lord, whether you want to be or not, just the way it is. So I appreciate every single one of you. I appreciate our sponsor of this episode. I think the best way to close this out is with a little bit of a somber song and, a little moment of silence and a thought and prayer for a great fallen film critic in the Cleveland movie scene who was more than likely zapped into another dimension, never to be seen again. Till next time, binge on.